Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. It is NFL trade deadline day, and we will keep you up to date with the latest in the NFL. The Titans have traded Draymond Jones to the Baltimore Ravens last night, a conditional fifth-round pick that can turn into a fourth-round pick. So we'll keep you up to date on if the Titans make any more moves. Take your thoughts on that throughout the show. 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. We'll have the Rob Rant coming up later this hour at 745. Joe, the Preds in action last night. They mount a pretty dramatic comeback in the third period. They went through a stretch late in the first and basically throughout all of the second where it was bad. They were not getting much going out there against Vancouver. And then in the third, they get a goal from Michael Bunting, and then a goal late in the third to tie it from Nick Blankenberg to send the game to overtime. You know, the overtime in the NHL, 3-on-3, has basically turned into a possession game. It used to be when they first started it, you know, you're basically trading chances, and it was very entertaining at 3-on-3. And now, frankly, it's become borderline unwatchable in the 3-on-3 overtime because if – you don't have a perfect break. Everybody's just kind of circling back out and just circling and circling and waiting to attack. Vancouver had the puck for the majority of the overtime, but there are 10 seconds left on a faceoff in your defensive zone. You start to fly the zone out of there after you're battling for the puck on the faceoff. You lose control of the puck. Vancouver gets it to Brock Besser in front of the net. And with like 2 seconds left in overtime, the Predators lose, which is the second time this year that they've lost in the dying seconds of overtime. So, Joe, the bottom line is a good point gained in terms of your comeback in the third period, but you're 2 seconds away from getting things to a shootout, and I think you like your chances in a shootout with some of the shooters that you have and with UC Saros in net. So they've lost four out of their last five. One of those has come in overtime. They just really can't get a whole lot of traction. And the kind of the big thing, Joe, with the way this team is constructed, I don't know how many games you can really be afford to lose when you're scoring four goals, because they don't score four goals very often. And when you score four goals, probably need to walk away with a win in those games.
Yeah. So great comeback, but also, you know, you're in that situation to have to do that. And then the crushing way to lose it. So I got to ask you. So I saw Alex Doherty's tweet about like yelling in the Preds locker room, but not necessarily like at each other, but just a very upset team. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that, I just,
yeah, they were pretty pissed after that game. And I think it's, you know, when you are basically a second and a half away from getting things to a shootout and having a chance to come away with 2 points there, when you just make a crucial error at the end of the game to lose it, I mean, they know that every point's going to be at a premium, and that's just one that you basically gave away last night in terms of, like, you almost literally handed it to them in front of the net. I mean, that just can't happen.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, when you're a team, they don't have much margin for error, and that's just not going to change. So it's a team that has to win by details and just being sound and solid. And so when you make those little mistakes that can turn into losses, I mean, it's just, you know, like it's just way more costly for a team like this. So, you know, I feel like they've played maybe a little better here. I mean, obviously, you know, Calgary's a bad team. So,
yeah.
You know, but still, like, okay, so you handle a bad team. I mean, is that like last year, you know, I don't know. I felt like they could lose to that teams like that too. I don't know. I feel like, you tell me, they're a little bit better. They've improved. They've gotten themselves to be more competitive. Still, again, just not a lot of margin for error, and
yeah.
And still just scrounging to try to get enough offense.
Well, and Steven Stamkos, 2 points in 14 games. He's got one goal, one assist in 14 games. Another game last night where he just doesn't really have much going on out there. And, you know, we've talked a lot about him so far this year. You know, some of it is on the fact that the Predators at center just are not very good. But some of, I mean, if you go this long where you're just basically not a factor out there offensively, that's not good. I mean, it's a bad deal right now with Steven Stamkos. And I'm really interested to see how this ends up here. Like, I think at first glance, Joe, you look at the contract and it's like, well, you got two more years on that deal at $8 million after this year. I don't know that he's going anywhere. You know, he hasn't scored since October the 16th at Montreal, and he hasn't got a point since then either. And you're talking about at this point, what's that been, 9 games? Yeah, I think it's been 9 games that he just doesn't have a point. And there's, you know, Elliot Friedman's talked about it with DVD. You could talk me into some team around the league that has a better situation at center, maybe being interested in acquiring him if the Predators ate a lot of the deal, you know, and maybe he's a better fit somewhere else. I don't know. Like, it just, it's not working with Steven Stamkos here. And it just, it'd be one thing if it was 2 points in 14 games, Joe, but he's just incredibly unlucky and he's just ringing it off the post all the time and he's getting some good looks, but he's just not doing much at all out there. And that to me is really concerning.
So is he moving rapidly toward just done, or, like you said, a good team, a good situation with a good centerman? Would that be rejuvenation? Would a team out there believe there could be rejuvenation that there's still tread on the tires? Because it may come down to that, right? Like,
it's a good question. Like, yeah. Also, I know the cap's going up. So the $8 million, you know, with a cap going up as dramatically as it is, you're going to start to see, you know, we just saw Kaprizov sign a $17 million per year deal. So the cap is moving into a different stratosphere in the NHL. But it's still, I mean, it's $8 million that you're not getting any production out of. Like, I don't think there's any way the Predators could move on from his deal if they didn't eat like half of it. And I just, do the Predators want to do that? Is there any team out there that wants him, even if the Predators eat half of it? Like, it's a really interesting spot they're in with him.
I could talk myself into, I just think that guy is in a bad situation. That's a terrible team. They are the worst team down the middle in the league. I could talk myself into, yeah, we'll eat half of that. And I bet you he comes in and all of a sudden a couple go in for him and it looks at least, you know, 70, 80% of what it used to in Tampa. I mean, I could talk myself into that as an NHL GM. And obviously we're probably getting ahead of ourselves. It's still, you know, I mean, you know, you have to see where things go with this team, but it is something to think about. Justin from Nashville says Stamkos is a bad deal, but no one talks about Shea 7x7. And I know, you know, Shea last night, toughie.
That one's not going anywhere. Like, you know, and look, I do think Shea has been better than he was a year ago, but there are still some moments where it's like, whoa, man, it's just rough. I mean, last night had a couple where it's just rough. So problem is, I don't think that one's going anywhere. I think you're stuck with that one for a while.
Yeah. Texter says, has anyone ever gotten that bad in so little time? What happened? Well, again, I think
yes, they have.
Yeah, because and look, 40 goals in his last year there, but you could see some writing on the wall with some of the underlying numbers or whatever, you know, in Tampa. I mean, that it does happen. The guy's played at a high level for a long, long time in this league.
Yeah, well, we said it at the time. I mean, somebody was going to be right, and somebody was going to be wrong on the Stamkos part of this. Clearly, you know, he was looking for a deal that, by the way, he was right about. He got it. He just got it in Nashville, right? And we said, you know, either the Predators are going to be right about it, and he's still got, you know, 4 years of pretty good hockey left in him, or the Lightning are going to be right. And so far, it looks like the Lightning may have nailed that one.
Yeah. And we made fun of them. So I just would like to, you know, extend my apologies. I mean, you know, it's the long, long time in the league and everything, the high level. And remember, when you are part of that many deep playoff runs, too, that's like each one of those is like another year on your career, too, you know? I'm not making excuses or whatever, but I'm just saying, like, it's not the craziest thing when you consider, you look at the entirety of his career, and then again, he comes here, and it's a bad fit, bad situation.
Yeah, look, I don't believe – that he's as bad as the numbers would suggest right now at this stage of his career. You know, I think clearly the days of him being an elite player are gone, but I don't think he's this bad. Like, I don't think he's as bad as he's been, but this is clearly just they're having a heck of a time trying to find some chemistry with him, and it's just a bad fit. And, you know, at this point, you're talking about a season and 14 games worth of evidence. I just don't know how much better it's going to get with him here. It seems like a bad fit. So we'll see what happens on that front. 615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts to get to on the Predators. We will, of course, keep you updated on all things NFL trade deadline throughout the show. Plus, a former Vol calling out Josh Heupel. We will get into that as well. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. The NFL trade deadline going on. We will keep you up to date with the latest on that front. Titans have traded Draymond Jones to the Baltimore Ravens in exchange for a conditional fifth-round pick that can become a fourth-rounder. Draymond Jones has 4.5 sacks in the last four games, so we'll see what he does for the Baltimore Ravens. Taking your thoughts on our phone line. A lot of thoughts on the Stamkos front on the Predators. 2 points in 14 games so far for Stamkos. What do you do with him? What happens with Stamkos moving forward? You know, a lot of talking about him slowing down. And Joe, I think that's what makes this even more mystifying, is if you look at, you know, the NHL does this thing called NHL Edge, where you can look at the skating stats and all those things. And his skating numbers are still pretty good. Like, he still moves around pretty well. It just makes it even more confusing as to why it's not working. And again, I think a lot of it is they just can't find chemistry with him. I don't think they're very good down the middle at center. And I think he needs, at this stage of his career, people to get him the puck. And I just don't think they're very good at getting him the puck. So that's part of it. But it should be better than this. Like, they're not that bad at getting the puck, where he's got one goal in 14 games and 2 points in 14 games. So it's just it's a weird dynamic going on with him right now. You know, people have talked about the power play. They have adjusted the power play, and they've broken up that top unit, and they've moved things around. Like, Forsberg was with Halla last night, and that worked out pretty well. And they've kind of separated things there on the power play. I still say on the power play, they're not getting Stamkos the puck anywhere near enough. Like, they got to lean into that one-timer. And I know that's the first thing that teams try to take away from their power play, is his one-timer, because of how lethal it is. But you can still find a way to get it to him more than they are. And it's just not working right now.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's where he's got to be. Like, that should be, you know, a weapon you can count on, and a weapon that you need to lean into and maximize. And even that's not, you know, it's not working for them. So I just, you know, people on the title, there's a lot of response. You know, what about changing the coach? What Yep. about him, you know, retiring? You know, I don't think that's, I mean, I could be wrong, but I think it's another stop probably in his future. As a general hockey fan, I'd like to see how much he has left in a different situation, you know. And I understand, yeah, you know, and I do feel like maybe we've gotten to the point with Preds fans where it's like, yeah, maybe that's just what has to happen. I mean,
yeah,
as early as this season is, and as, you know, as improved in some ways as the team is, they still don't look like a team that's going to, to me, you know, really threaten to get into the postseason. So, you know, it feels already like we're headed towards something like that.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that part of it goes. In the meantime, like, if you're looking for good news for the Predators, Philip Forsberg was unbelievable last night. He had a goal and assist. He had 9 shots on goal. I think he had 12 shot attempts last night. So, good to see him play the way that he did. Other part that looks really encouraging, Joe, Matthew Wood looks good. Matthew Wood, you know, well, it's the NHL, and sometimes you see guys come in and early in their career, they're good and they're productive, and then they hit a wall. But so far, like, Matthew Wood, I think, looks pretty good. And he's not perfect. Like, there's still some things defensively that I think he's got to work on, but he feels dangerous when the puck is on his stick. He's got a couple goals so far. He got another assist last night. Like, you're looking at a 20-year-old for the Predators, which is what they need. Some of these young guys coming in and look good. Matthew Wood, I think, has been very good to this point.
Yeah, no, and they obviously they need something like this to work out. One of these young guys to come in and work out. I mean, I feel like physically he looks the part. You know, he's able to, like you said, only at 20 years old. I mean, what is he, 6'3", 200 or so? He looks good out there, and so they need more stories like that. But there's, you know, a lot of young guys that you're still kind of waiting on with this organization. This is one of them that almost kind of got a little bit lost in all the talk about like Kemmel and some of these other guys, but it's a welcome development for this team.
Yep, we'll see. You know, I would assume over the next few weeks here and months that you're going to see Kemmel at some point. You're probably going to, maybe Molendijk at some point. I mean, Ryan Ufko on defense playing good in Milwaukee right now, so there's an option there too. Like, you're going to see some of these young guys, I think, start to trickle in to the lineup. You know, I will say their penalty kill has been unbelievable all year, and then Cole Smith gets hurt, and he's out 3 to 6 weeks, and immediately Vancouver scores two power play goals last night on their penalty kill. So it's like, man, how important is Cole Smith to the penalty kill? We'll see what that looks like. But the power play looked a little bit better. But the real question is, can they find any sort of traction here? Like, they're going to need to put together a streak, because the way that they're operating right now, where it's like, you know, win one, maybe win a couple in a row, and then lose two or three in a row, like, you do that for long enough, you're going to be out of the mix here pretty soon. So you got Minnesota tonight. You got Philly coming in on Thursday, Dallas on Saturday. They're playing an absolute ton of hockey games in a very short amount of time. Yeah, it's not going to look pretty every night because of the schedule, but can you find a way to grind out some wins and some points? We'll see if the Predators can do that. We will get into the Vols and the college football playoff, all of that coming up next. We got the Rob Rant coming up at 7:45. And, of course, we'll keep you up to date on the latest on the NFL trade deadline as well. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. We'll have the Rob Rant coming up here in just a few minutes at 7:45. Taking your thoughts in the meantime, 615-737-1025. Joe, as we discussed yesterday, in the aftermath of the loss for Tennessee to the Oklahoma Sooners, and basically the elimination from the college football playoff, a lot of conversation in the fan base, on the Josh Heupel front, on the coaching staff front. And again, most of them really don't zero in on Heupel. It's like, well, is Heupel going to make some changes to the staff after the year? Jonathan Crompton, former Tennessee quarterback who was on the Big Orange podcast postgame show, had this to say on the Josh Heupel front, Joe. Quote, "I'm not the one to call for a coach to get fired. That's not my thing. What I'm saying is I do think Heupel is our James Franklin. He's going to win us 9 to 10 ball games a year. The odd year we'll get to 11, and that's about our ceiling," end quote from Jonathan Crompton. What do you make of that, Joe, of Josh Heupel is Tennessee's James Franklin? What does that mean?
Yeah, well, I think we mentioned this yesterday, and look, I understand that James Franklin did not, you know, he did not, he won the Big Ten one time. He did not win most of the big games. He could not, he again, one time he beat Ohio State, I think, in his entire Penn State tenure. He didn't have a good record against Michigan. He lost, you know, this year they lost the Oregon game. James Franklin, that performance for a program, like 99% of programs would take that. So I understand that's it's an insult. It's just kind of how you look at it. To me, I look at it, and Mark Richt is another one that, like, you know, I've heard Vols fans throw out there. And again, that's a guy who I think he won the SEC a couple times, right? I think in his tenure. Again, I understand. It's like now they have Kirby Smart. They won it all. They got over the hump. Mark Richt seemed to, you know, he'd go up against Saban in a big game and they get the doors blow off or whatever. But that's another example to me of, like, see, if you have that performance consistently as a program, it means that you are consistently in the mix. You have a chance. I mean, if you're going to be that, you're going to go to the playoff almost every year, right? Like, those guys did not – like, Richt and Franklin did not have the benefit of all these years of the 12-team playoff. If they did, yes, their teams would be – last year, Franklin's team won two playoff games. So, first of all, I think there's a lacking perspective there from Crompton. And I don't know how much Tennessee fans care about what Jonathan Crompton says, frankly. I don't know. You tell me.
Not much.
Okay. Well, there you – so, I just think, again, it's just a lacking perspective in terms of – what that means. And we talked about it yesterday, Robbie. Look, I get it. At some point, if you're like, you know what, you're just never going to get to the highest level. Thank you, Josh Heupel, for what you've done. But like, then you know what? At some point, you take the risk and you say, okay, how do you upgrade? At some point. We're not close to that right now.
No, I was going to say, let's – let him be Mark Richt for a while, right? Like, if it gets to the point after an extended period of time of that where you just can't break through and win the big one, then fine. Yeah, I have that conversation at some point. But let's get to that first, right? Like, wouldn't it be a pretty good problem to have if you're Tennessee of getting in the college football playoff every year? Like, Heupel, as we talked about yesterday, has done a good job. He's not perfect. Is he going to win a national championship at Tennessee? I don't know. But that's the thing, Joe. I don't know. Like, there are some coaches that Tennessee has hired where I knew, that ain't happening. Like, it ain't happening. He could. I have no idea. Like, it's going to take the right team and the right year. And, look, again, as I said yesterday, I have no problem with Tennessee fans having high expectations, having high standards. I think that's good. I think Tennessee's fan base – is a really good thing. I think they're very passionate. I think sometimes they get in their own way, which I think we see from time to time. But I think also, like, you have to recognize realistically that Tennessee is not Ohio State. Tennessee is not, as much as it pains you to say it, Alabama, right? So they've had a 20-some-odd year run here where there has been limited success. So if you get to the point where your biggest problem as a program is – well, we keep winning a whole lot, but we don't necessarily win all the big games. If that becomes your biggest problem at some point, then yes, address it at that point. But let's get to that on a consistent basis first.
Exactly. Texter says, not a bad take by Crompton because Tennessee is the Penn State of the SEC. Well, are you sure? Because if you take the Big Ten, Michigan had a couple, you know, tremendous years at the end under Harbaugh. But if you take the Big Ten for the last 20 years, 15 years. Penn State's the number two program in the Big Ten. It's Ohio State, then it's Penn State. That's not what Tennessee is in the SEC. Now look.
Very different, but yeah.
It's very different. Yeah, exactly. Like, I understand it's just there's just way more competitive programs in this league than there are in the Big Ten. But if you could be the Penn State of the SEC, to me, that means you're the number two program in the SEC. I mean, that's pretty significant. Now, on the flip side of this, Robbie, I don't know if you saw. You did. I sent it to you guys. On the flip side of this, we have Kirk Herbstreit's reaction to Tennessee fans and what they're saying about Josh Heupel. We got that right here.
Tip of the cap to the fans, to the game ops at Tennessee. It's as good of a scene to me as there is in the country when they're rolling. And I think. I heard some nonsense from Tennessee fans about Josh Heupel's got to go. Oh, whoever loses has got to go. Man, bull. Have you thought about where Tennessee's football program was before Josh Heupel got there? Off the field issues, drama, BS, all going. This is a good football team that lost maybe the two best corners on one team. You should be just like, lock Josh Heupel and his staff down. For 100 years, you can't win every game. You guys are heading in a great direction. Be grateful. It's going to come. You can't win them all. And when you lose one, it doesn't mean you need to fire your coach. You know, that I'm just tired of hearing a team, all these fans, when they lose a game, we got to fire our coach. That's not the answer. So anyway, let's, Joey, we got 18.
So there you go.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with a lot of what he said. Now, as I said yesterday, I think we're getting pretty close, and I'm already there to the point where the talking about what Josh Heupel inherited, it's time to move on from that. I mean, it's been 5 years, so it's time to move on from that at this point. You know, I don't agree with the locking him down for 100 years part of this either, or his staff, but largely, I agree. Like, I do think they're headed in a good direction. I do think if you look at the way that this year unfolded, not only with the quarterback stuff in the spring, but they did have an All-American corner that wasn't available. They did have their next best corner that's been out basically the whole year. Like, there's a lot of things you could point to if you want to that explain why maybe they haven't been as good on defense as you think. Now, I as I said yesterday, Joe, I think next year is a really important year. Like, if you're not back in the playoff next year, if you're Tennessee, then I think it's going to start to get loud. And I think that's fair at that point. I'm not saying he gets fired if they're not back in the playoff next year, but I do think it gets loud heading into that next year. So that's where you are with Tennessee. So largely agree with Herbstreit there. I think he was probably extreme on both sides of the front and back of that argument.
Yeah. The lock him up for 100 years, you know, that's a little bit extreme. Like, you know, coaches can coach themselves out of a job. I figured Brandon would, on the YouTube chat, would lose his mind at the idea of Glenn Ellerbe having a lifetime deal. But here's Brandon. So I'm glad that Brandon said this so that I have time to dunk on this. He says, translation, Josh gives me access, so I love him. I mean, really? You really think that, like, Herbstreit gets access from everybody. They go sit
anywhere
in a meeting.
Wants, yeah,
they go sit in a meeting with all these coaches and they, you know, they talk about the team. Like Herbstreit cares like more about like Tennessee access than any other place. He has access to all these programs. Are these guys generally going to defend coaches? Yes. Do they sometimes do that to a fault? Yes, they do. But Herbstreit's correct in this situation in terms of the talking about firing now. It's pretty silly. And we totally agree, Robbie, on like there's a limitation to, as you get further and further away from how bad it was when he inherited it, you know, to me there's a limitation on how much that's relevant as you keep moving forward, because if you're good, you change expectations, and then you have to live up to expectations that you have set. That's what good coaches do, you know? And so at some point that becomes – it's becoming less and less important. But also, like, they are, I think, moving in a good direction. They do have recruiting going, and they have the potential next year to have a young and dynamic quarterback in that offense. We just don't know which one it will be, but they have two possible answers there.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll have the Rob rant coming up next. Take your thoughts in the meantime on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll get back into the Titans and the NFL trading deadline coming up as well. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
This dude is an idiot.
We got Bible study at 3:30 during the snack period.
I'm going to make my voice go like this.
You can't give alley-oops.
They think you're some buffoon. That's my guy. Like, I love Josh Heupel.
That's my coach.
Exactly.
Did you offer Feinbaum a man?
I did not, but that's a
hey,
great
Paul,
point.
I got something for you.
How's your breath?
It's not good, eh?
You tell him I'm coming, and hell's coming with me.
I don't know that I have especially pointy nipples.
I've got other words I can say, but I'm going to hold those off. It is that time of the day, time for the Rob Rant here on the program, brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Rise up to better health. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. Ian, very well done on the Pierre Maguire, Phil Kessel part of that mashup there. That's good stuff, my friend. Very good stuff.
Yes, a little breath drop there. Yeah.
That was it was very good. Joe, I want to speak today to hypocritical, mainly Titan, but I think football fans out there. And look, I don't want to get caught up again too much in a Vrabel conversation, but I do want to visit this because I saw this over the weekend and it kind of irritates me a little bit. So one of the big things at the end of the Vrabel tenure here in Nashville was, well, the guy can't develop a quarterback, right? It's like, well, I don't have any confidence that Vrabel can develop a quarterback. He's a defensive guy. He keeps hiring all these stooges on the offensive side of the ball, be that Todd Downing, or you got all these different hires internally that they've made, and the quarterback play is not good, and Will Levis has come in. And if you want Will Levis to succeed, you probably need to get Mike Vrabel out of here. And boy, did we see how that played out. Not that that's necessarily a total Vrabel thing, but man, didn't go so well. And now, Joe, Drake May is playing great, right? Playing great football. He's completing almost 75% of his passes this year. He's at 9 yards an attempt, 2,200 yards, 17 touchdowns, 4 picks. Patriots are 7-2. And all I heard from some Titans fans over the weekend, and some that I'm friends with and that we were texting about this, was that, wow, it's amazing how good Vrabel looks when he's got a quarterback bailing him out. It's like, well, can the guy work with quarterbacks or can he not? We can't have it both ways. Like, we can't be just crushing him for not being able to work with quarterbacks. And now when he's got a quarterback playing well for him, saying that, well, the only reason he's any good in New England is because of the quarterback. Which one is it? Like, can the guy not develop quarterbacks, or is all of his success due to the quarterback? I mean, the bottom line is, I think we're figuring out, Joe, that Vrabel's pretty darn good coach. They're 7-2. Yes, Drake May has been great, but like, this idea that Vrabel just could not work with and or develop and or handle young quarterbacks, I think is getting, it's being thrown out the door here. And look, I know Drake May showed some things last year that you felt excited about, but let me read to you his numbers from last year. He completed 66% of his passes, 2,200 yards, 15 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Fine as a rookie quarterback, right? 6-7 an attempt. He's been way better this year, way better. And is some of that just natural improvement? Is some of that Josh McDaniels? Sure. But I don't know how we can get to the point where we just absolve Mike Vrabel from any credit on the Drake May front, when all people did at the end of his tenure here was hammer him about how he can't develop quarterbacks.
Well, I admire your courage for bringing up Mike Vrabel.
Can he develop quarterbacks or can he not? That's my main question.
Yeah, well, the thing about that, too, is like, so Mike Vrabel was the head coach here when the Titans had certainly the best quarterback play since Steve McNair. And even if you just go, you know, like in 2020, like that by the numbers, I mean, it was, you know, probably the best statistical year a Titans quarterback has had. I mean, so we've seen Mike Vrabel coach teams that had like high level Pro Bowl level quarterback play. So was he independent of that? I mean, I guess I'm trying to remember, like, because there were so many things going on at the end of the Vrabel, you know, era, and some people who did want him out, and some people who were like, no, that's not the answer. Look at all the things that are wrong with this team. I guess, you know, that was Will Levis's rookie year, which, I don't know, wasn't like, it left enough promise that we all thought, right? I mean, we knew he was going to get the job, and Brian Callahan said that's a big part of why he took the job and all that stuff. So it's not like it even looked that bad. Were people blaming him for Mariota? I mean,
I don't think so. But I mean, like somebody says, Vrabel's lucked out because he has Josh McDaniels and not Todd Downing. Chip from Mount Juliet says it's McDaniels, it's not Vrabel. Well, like, Vrabel hired McDaniels. Like, right. Vrabel didn't have to hire Josh McDaniels to be. I know that Josh McDaniels just kind of assumed as the de facto Patriots offensive coordinator when he's not, you know, trying his hand at being a head coach in the league. But Vrabel did not have to hire Josh McDaniels.
Yeah, I mean, look, no one's saying he's a quarterback's coach, Chip. No, we're not saying that. That's the thing. I mean, you can actually be a head coach in this league and not be a play-calling quarterback coach and have success. You have to have a good OC. And, yeah, the good thing for Vrabel long-term is that McDaniels is, like, he's pretty much unhirable as a head coach now. So it's, like, it's a beautiful situation. But, yeah, it's all dumb. I mean, it's stupid. Like, a lot of it is like, is the quarterback good enough? I mean, we talk about developing quarterbacks, and of course that's important, and everybody coaches them, and everybody works on basically the same fundamentals, and you have to be good at developing game plans and play calling around them and all that stuff. But like, how much of this is also like, God, I hope this guy's good. Oh, this guy's good. All right, let's win. I mean, that's what's happening, right? More than anything.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, his numbers are outrageous. Like, he's 74.1% of his passes, 17 touchdowns, 4 picks. He went from throwing for 175 a game last year, Joe, to 253. And he's gone up like 80 yards per game this year. It's a pretty dramatic improvement from Drake May from year one to year two.
Yeah. No, he's look, he's a tremendous talent. I mean, remember, Drake May, for a long time, it was like, who's better, Drake May, Caleb Williams? And then, you know, Jaden Daniels gets in there, and you kind of forget about him. But the guy is – he's a tremendous talent. And, you know, I think the thing with Vrabel and coaches like Vrabel, like if the Titans bring in Robert Saleh, for example, if that's the choice, if it's a coach like that, I mean, it's still – like it's a lot of, like, the work environment and how you handle people personally, you know, beyond, yeah, like, coaching the quarterback specifics, you know. And it seems like he's got a good thing going there. And for the most part, that's one of his big, big strengths of being an effective coach in this league. A lot of Todd Downing comments on the text line.
Yeah.
So. And then, and that's a fair. That's a fair criticism of Vrabel, no doubt.
And again, like, you know, Vrabel's not perfect. But I think it's also, Joe, and we were talking about this off the air yesterday, you know, all of a sudden he's turned into some media darling up there too. Like, I think it's kind of clear that he has learned some things from stop one to stop two.
Yeah, it's pretty disappointing. It's pretty ridiculous. What an ass. You know, Titans can say we ass, but also Vrabel, you're kind of an ass for not doing that stuff when you were here. Now, he's all on these shows. Oh, just yucking it up with everybody. I mean, it could have been you and Kaharski. Think about the beautiful music you two could have made together.
Yeah, we'll see what happens if they start to lose. Maybe it gets a little bit more tense.
That is true.
You know, it's the early honeymoon. They're winning.
He'll flip it to just on to Cincinnati. Yeah, that is a good point.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Back into the Titans, the NFL trade deadline coming up next. Plus, Titans fans, I want to talk to you. Let's have a therapy session coming up next. 615-737-1025, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.